The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Leaving cert just around the corner, lots of parents will be asking, are we putting our children through too much stress? But is it important to still have a certain amount of stress in our children's lives so that we expose them to the normal stress and anxiety that they will undoubtedly experience in adulthood? Well, joining me now to talk about this is Colman Nochter, child and adolescent psychotherapist. Colman, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
First of all, the Leaving Cert, a good or a bad thing? Millions have been through the process and millions will be saying, divvled a bit of harm it did me.
Yeah, I suppose from an infrastructure point of view, any high-stakes exam, which kind of culminates the whole of your school career, is going to create high levels of stress and anxiety because of the, you know, the, what it bears in terms of outcome and everything else. But I suppose from the point of view of if you put in more gradual assessments is the argument that you just spread the anxiety over a period of time. But I think there's a middle ground where I suppose perhaps the exam might still exist, but maybe the weight that it carries might be able to be less because a lot of people do struggle with it. And as a, like my mother's in her 80s and she still has Leaving Cert nightmares, you know what I mean, from the point of view. So it's not new that it's causing stress and anxiety, but probably what I think is probably the expectation and the build-up around the Leaving Cert over the last number of years has certainly gained momentum. And now we have young people stressing about Leaving Cert in first and second year, which we never had before.
Now, the question is whether or not it is the Leaving Cert itself or whether it is a combination of lifestyle changes for teenagers that have happened in the last couple of decades allied with the Leaving Cert.
I think when we think about the mental health crisis for young people at the moment, there's variables that kind of contribute to that. And I do think the kind of pervasive social media performance related kind of phone-based childhoods have taken away. I don't think children maybe have the... We're seeing the first generation of children who didn't grow up on the street or the road. There's a kind of social atrophy for that. And there's also, I think, maybe a lack of certain skills, life skills that other generations would have before. But also there's young people who are growing up today. The level of scrutiny and performance and expectation on these children is beyond anything that I would have witnessed in my many years of doing this job. So while there are maybe individual qualities within the children that are causing them to struggle, the environment is incredibly difficult at the same time. And I think as adults, we find it hard to even comprehend what it's like. I mean, the idea of, you know, having to answer 70 Snapchat messages before you have your Cocoa Pops in the morning. That's the level of scrutiny that these young people are living with. And I think that's a variable in it, but also maybe their own individual skill sets of being able to be resilient and manage it. I think there's another side of it. We seem to think that being mentally healthy is where you don't feel sad or you don't feel disappointed or you don't experience that. That's a really wrong message. Being mentally healthy is how you manage the inevitable failures, disappointments and things like that. So it's not about having a kind of an adversity-free childhood, but it's about supporting children through the inevitable adversity that occurs.
You have a kind of a mantra, not all worry is anxiety, not all sadness is depression.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing for parents and for young people. I think we are slipping into a kind of an idea of pathologizing life experiences and feeling worried and feeling sad is part of living. Being anxious and being depressed is a completely different situation altogether. And so it's really important that we don't conflate those two things. But when you have things like TikTok and things like saying, you know, if you ever forget your keys, you've got this condition and, you know, we should never feel sad. We should never feel worried. That's really, it's an unfortunate and damaging message for young people who I think the supporting people through the disappointment, failure, sadness and worry, it's where we need to concentrate effort, not on creating a life where that doesn't exist.
Now, going back to the Leaving Cert, are we blaming the Leaving Cert for some of these expressed concerns of young people? Whereas, you know, the thing to do is not to change the Leaving Cert, but maybe ban social media for the under 16s, ban mobile phones for the under 14s or under 13s, smartphones. You know, that we do the easy thing, which is like, let's change the Leaving Cert. But the hard thing, which is saying you're not having a phone, we won't do that.
Yeah, I'm not so sure changing the Leaving Cert would solve all the issues of today. But I do think there needs to be changes to the Leaving Cert. But I do think needs to be kind of changes around, I suppose, our expectations of Leaving Cert and how much importance we place on it. I think that's something we could do. But in terms of the banning phones, we need to teach children how to negotiate the online world. That we can't just have them enter cold. We need media literacy. We need to prepare them for that. But we need to buy as much time as possible prepare those. Like, being online is not a human right, it's a responsibility. And my view is always, you know, you earn the right by showing the responsibility. And so we need to give youngsters time to show that they're responsible enough to be able to manage that space. And, you know, by delaying ownership and things like that, we allow ourselves the time to put that in place before they go in there. Unfortunately, that's not happening. Children are getting phones far too young where they have no skill set to manage that, and, you know, are proving that they haven't got the mental fitness to be able to do that. And mental fitness is important. Like, we can't grow or develop without discomfort. Mental fitness, no different to physical fitness. You have to have surmountable stress in your life where you can learn how to manage. Like, you learn to run 5K by building up incrementally, but there's a level of discomfort in order to do that. And so mental fitness, we have to have surmountable stress. We want children to be pushed to be able to develop skills, to cope, to learn, to respond, but not in ways that overwhelm them. We want our children to be socially conscious, but we don't want them lying awake at night worrying about single-use plastics. You know, it's always about that balance, if that makes sense.
Now, what about parents getting involved in their children's lives? You know, seeing at their children's accomplishments as a reflection on the parents. I mean, are parents too involved?
Yeah, I would worry that that's becoming more a trend. I think, you know, we see our children often as an extension of ourselves, and so their successes are ours, and consequently their failures are ours as well. And so I think a lot of parents, or some parents, not all, see childhood and adolescence as almost like an apprenticeship for adulthood. So everything they do has to have a dividend, and, you know, you get points and you're leaving for that, and you should get this, and there's that sort of focus. And there isn't, and you can see that in terms of children's sport and everything else, that level of intensity around it, which I don't think was there 10, 15 years ago. And when adults get involved, the competition goes up and the fun goes down. And I just wonder, and it goes back to that point of children growing up on the road, like, there's the opportunity for young people and teenagers to play and to just be and have that downtime. I think it's becoming less and less, and I think we're undervaluing that. If anything doesn't have a dividend, we don't seem to place value in it. But growing up as a child or an adolescent, the play and that space to become an autonomous decision maker, to learn all that sort of life skills, are crucially important. And I don't know whether children and teenagers have a huge opportunity to develop them.
Now, the idea of the points race, you know, the 600, 625 points that people seek for certain courses, and they may not even be courses that are too intellectually demanding or challenging. It's just the law of the market. Too few places, the points go up. I mean, in the design of the CAO and applications for third level education, have we kind of gone wrong here where we're putting square 625 pointer pegs in round holes?
Yeah, well, I would have a view that the CAO points shouldn't be the only entry points that's considered into university. So say, for example, if somebody had an interest in becoming a mental health nurse, and let's say they volunteered in their local mental health institution or worked with a charity or had familiar with it, there should be ways that almost feeds into their suitability other than just their performance in a high state exam. But obviously the issue around, and this is something I've noticed, like, what would be considered a reasonable leaving cert in 1998, 1999 is considerably different to the one that is now. And I think that's a real concern, that the bar of expectation has gone up and up and up, and it only goes up every year. And that's almost why, and I've said this before, I think we've demonized average. Do you know what I mean? That average is no longer good enough. It's only average or just average. But by definition, most of us will be average. But if we all want to be above average, then we can sign a huge amount of people to be disappointed or feeling disgruntled. And, you know, when you raise the points and the points go higher every year, that expectation of everybody having to hit those marks, it's across the board. The tension, the expectation, and the anxiety rises. But, you know, I would see the CAO points as the single point of entry to university as problematic from a leaving cert point of view and from a college point of view. I work in a third level university, and, you know, you want people coming to the courses who have thought it out and want to do it rather than want to use every point that they got.
There's no question in my experience, studying something that you really love is not hard work.
Yeah, well, they say, you know, putting work into something that you don't like is stress, and putting the same amount of work into something you like is passion. And, you know, and again, trying to find that level of suitability. But also, I think there's the element of the tyranny of choice. You know, there's so many options for people that a lot of leaving cert students, and more so in recent years, they haven't really a clue what they want to do when they get to that point. And so they're kind of putting the tail on the donkey when they're doing CAO points rather than having a clear maybe focus from before. I mean, maybe that's to do it because the options are so great. And also the more options you have, the more anxious you'll be because the more likelihood of you making the wrong decision. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and the other thing, you talk about the quest for perfection in every aspect of their lives, you know, how they look, their skin quality, their clothing, their style, their musical taste, everything, they've got to go for the very best. I mean, time was you could slouch into college and it didn't matter how you looked. In fact, you probably didn't look spiffing at all, but that's the way it was. Now the pressure's on every aspect of their lives.
Oh, for sure. And be under no illusions, teenagers especially live in a very performative culture. So it is absolutely about maintaining the level of performance. And so, you know, if you've one child who maybe spends an hour putting on makeup before she goes to school in first year, she has to sustain that for the next 6 years because she doesn't want to let that standard drop. And again, that level of stress and expectation. But perfectionism is a flawed thing because inevitably something will go wrong. But what perfectionists tend to do is say, I just wasn't perfectionistic enough, and they double down on it, you know. And the idea that perfectionism is driven not by a desire to get it right, it's driven by a fear of getting it wrong. Mm. And that's where the anxiety is coming from.
Now, the question of average, you know, the idea of medals for participation, there is one for every member of the audience.
Yeah, unfortunately, again, when we try and have a kind of inclusive environment, sometimes the dial can flip too much in the other direction. I mean, from the point of view of if everyone wins a prize, nobody wins a prize in many ways. And so you have to introduce levels of competition into children's lives. And again, this comes back to that mental fitness that as you get older and as you are more capable of distinguishing between elite performance and average performance and other, then you can kind of introduce competition. And the issue has always been, at what pace do we introduce competition? We've seen situations where it's introduced far too early, where children on under 8 soccer teams are asked to go to a different club because they don't fit the mold of that. And then you have the other style where the participation awards kind of blur any sort of distinction between good, average and elite performance, which is not good either. Again, we have to strike a balance with that. But the kind of award for turning up has its downsides, but also then obviously overly competitive and elite level environment have their problems too. And one of the things about teenagers is that they don't have an opportunity to have social sport. Do you know what I mean? So as a 15, 16-year-old, if you go and to join a club, you have to train twice a week and matches on the weekend. And there's that level of commitment, whereas there's no five-a-side culture, if that makes sense, for teenagers, where they can just dip in and I'll go this week, but I won't go next week. And
Or even on the street, put two sweaters down to make a goalpost and kick a ball. That is kind of gone now because there's so little green space being provided in new housing developments that kids don't even have the opportunity to do that, and it's too dangerous to play among the traffic.
Yeah, and again, I think lots of teenagers would say they probably don't feel welcome when they hang out. If there's more than 3 or 4 of them in a group, there's an assumption that they're up to no good. And in many ways, we can't be surprised when teenagers are migrating online, because if we don't offer them an online or an offline space to be and gather, that's going to be a problem. And that's a real issue. I don't know whether we have, and I think this is not just teenagers, enough opportunities to gather in person. And I think, you know, we are tribal species and we do best in groups. And I just feel that teenagers don't have that sense of.
And of course, for the older generation, Coleman, they look at a group of teenagers and they feel threatened. When teenagers just wearing the uniform that they all wear, which might include a hoodie and tracksuit and trainers, and we suddenly see them as threatening figures when they may be perfectly grand guys.
100%, and they feel that. And I speak to teenagers all the time who feel that sense of not being welcomed in spaces, and so the online spaces is a more comfortable place for them to be, which is unfortunate. But the digital economy is designed that way, Pat. So if you and I were playing a computer game back in the 90s, we would have sat together with two joysticks. If teenagers want to play together now, they have to go to their own homes to play together. Does that make sense? So because the way in which the online thing is designed. So the fact that we've never been more virtually connected and physically disconnected.
Well, so much to talk and think about. Coleman, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. Coleman Nochter, child and adolescent psychotherapist. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.